I'm Bill Amber. I run a company here in San Francisco called Metallic, and it pretty much specialize in interactive, rich application development of all forms, mostly targeted at the web. And I'm going to show you a few different things that I've been working on lately. Talking about Visual Studio Blend, Silverlight 1.0, Silverlight 1.1, and just kind of the general concept of things. So to start off with, I imagine you guys have seen these things before. I figured they'd make for a fun little experiment to play around with the concept of interfaces and applications and things like that. So this has nothing to do with the Top Banana demo, which we're going to get to in a minute, but that shows you some other general things first. So this is Blend. Let me zoom out a little bit here. And here's my screenshot of my iPhone in Blend. And I've set some different things up with all of this. And I'll show you what that looks like as a Silverlight 1.0 app. Nice little blue more room here. Anyways, this was just kind of an experiment to play around with a few different things. But basically, I haven't had a chance. I started with 1.1 version of Silverlight, and 1.0 just launched. So I figured I'd better learn how to use 1.0 Silverlight. I like to have something entertaining to do while I'm learning new things. So I just got back from London, and the night before my presentation, I decided that I need to build an iPhone app to demo Silverlight 1.0. So that's where this all came from. So I can click on it here to power it up, and I get my little customized home screen here. Tell them what time it is and what day it is and all that sort of stuff. But if you just leave it sitting here, too, it'll turn itself off, which is what the actual iPhone does. But it'll turn on again, and you know, and go in here and do the basic little things with stuff, as I like to call it. So I didn't have quite enough time to go through here and build out every single piece of functionality of the iPhone yet, but just to hook up some of the basics. And the thing that was really interesting to me is I'm really not a designer. This whole thing isn't actually a screenshot. It's actually XAML. So if I zoom in here infinitely, wow. You can see there's no pixel data. That gives you the ability to create a scalable application and to do cool little interactions. Like I want to play around with the Chrome on here and do things like actually how to mimic the environment, give you a little bit of a dynamic reflection. And different sorts of things like that, as well as, now I'm able to use the timeline and go in here and play around with manipulating different effects and things like that. So, this was just kind of a fun, cool little test for me in messing around with some of the visual capabilities of Silverlight, because all I used was the tools that are available inside of Blend. So, it's just a few different vectors and curves and shapes and gradient fills, and some opacity blending and all of that. And the whole thing, minus the background image there, is 10K versus the source image that I was using as a reference is like 300K and has a finite resolution. So you can get really efficient with your file size delivery, plus you can play around with interactions and different dynamic elements, like a screenshot doesn't tell you what time it actually is. This gives you the actual time and date and things like that. So,
can you show us the XAML code for the
sure.
And also, you say you built the vector graphics for the iPhone itself using the Blend drawing tools?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't use...
did it take to do just the iPhone itself?
I literally didn't start this until the night before my presentation, so...
I'm asking for just this one segment here. I mean,
overall iPhone, it took me about a half an hour to make the basic iPhone, and then
that why you were talking about having no graphics capabilities?
Yeah, I mean, one, I run a company, two, I come from a coding background, and so, that's as deep as I get in my design. I've used Illustrator and Photoshop over the years for various jobs and whatnot, but I couldn't create something like this from scratch if it's a square with a bunch of rounded corners, so... It's got a lot of gradients. So I spent about a half an hour building the basic phone, and then I spent like 3 hours tweaking every single possible color combination of things, because I was getting really, really particular about this chrome reflection kind of look, and that kind of drove me a little psychotic, but, you know, nonetheless, I kept getting better and better results, and I'm like, ah. So, but I care, you know, what can I say? So here's, this is all the XAM, most of it is, I've got a few different timelines in here for some of the startup transitions and whatnot. And then, you know, the meat of it's kind of down here. But, I mean, this is, I didn't do any manual code. This is all auto-generated code. And one of the cool things is the auto-generated code is actually really clean for how much back and forth you can do with it. So it's 585 lines of tags. And like,
just for the phone.
For the phone, and about 200 lines of that is the storyboards for the different transition states. So, I mean, just to give you an idea of, like, working in Blend, how this works. So, you know, the overall shape of the phone wasn't that complicated. I mean, it's really just, I'll go in here and just kind of draw on top of what I've already got here for a second. But, you know, basically you make a square and then go in and round the corner, you know, so there's my basic, very basic outline for the phone, and then I can go in and mess with the fill. So if I want to have a black fill and then take a stroke, and you know, some of the cool things are you can hide the selection and then you can click and drag on these boxes so that you can play with. I'm holding down control to slow down the to finesse the range there, so you can kind of do some nice visual interactive adjustments that let you eyeball things really quickly. And then also you can apply more complicated effects. So like on the stroke, you know, the trick that I really found that started giving me the effect that I wanted was playing around with radial fills on the strokes themselves. So I can go in here and start playing around with this and switch to the modifier brush. And then, you know, so like if I go and put it up here in the corner, I can kind of hit that corner, and you know, there's a bunch of different ways you can play around with. You layer a couple of these together, and you can alpha blend them and do all kinds of things. So, you know, I was pretty surprised that I literally can't. I mean, for the most part, especially at a glance, you know, I can't tell the difference between screenshot and the XAML version. And it was really just playing with the gradients and the blends, and you know, it's very particular to get even alignment of things and consistency in the stroke depth and all of that. But yeah, you can make cool looking things pretty easy. I mean, fantastic things. The iPhone is just fantastically cool to look at. So knocking it off, you know, if you do a half decent job, looks really good. Whereas if you knock off something that looks like crap to start with, you can, you know, only do so good. So anyways, this was just kind of my, you know, throw together, play around with kind of more blend of reality type of thing, you know, just working in Blend, starting with the blank canvas and doing some basic interaction. All the coding in this is wired up in JavaScript, and it's just some basic quick event handlers, and things like that that are just standard JavaScript. So this is all the code. It's like half a dozen functions, and really the most complicated part of it is just that click, drag, slide, unlock thing, which is just a few mouse handlers. Yeah, Jay?
Hey, Bob. If you were to deploy this example, the advantages you'd have with this over using SVG or canvas tags for the render, you had a user interface convention for zooming in, and you also had an authoring tool which produced XAML. Were there any other benefits to going over?
Well, I think being able to do everything in one, you know, kind of one-stop shop, but being able to do my concepting, my design, my prototyping, my interaction, my fine-tuning.
So the development environment.
You know, yeah, in one quick process. And then also I'm using JavaScript and, you know, HTML web standards and cross-platform capital and everything, and I didn't have to spend any time testing or debugging what's going to work on the Mac.
Oh, because you had a single rendering engine.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, that was really nice. Plus just some of the general capabilities of, like, I can deliver this whole thing as a zip file, including bitmap objects and other things like that, which give me some other options on how to package my content, compress it, maintain quality. So there's some interesting technical features that you get out of the platform that extend traditional development, whether it's SVG or anything else. So those are nice. There's, the vast majority of things are going to cross multiple development platforms. Like, I could have just done this with a whole bunch of ping sequences and JavaScript and overlays and clever divs and all of that, but it was a lot quicker and easier for me to do it this way. I've got vector scalability, plus I've got a platform with various other capabilities layered on top of it. And the two things that I want to add that I didn't had to sleep at some point the next day was I want to add a video player to this so I can leverage the media player. And then I figured out how to hack the browser on my tablet so that when I rotate my computer, it'll actually rotate the interface will rotate with it. Kind of like that. So you can just kind of keep going with it. Yeah, Jim, quick.
Oh, I was going to ask, is it possible to make it turn 3D as well with the Blend?
3D, you can do in Blend, but not with Silverlight. So you can do software 3D and play around with some other things. I was playing around with some ideas, being able to give it a perspective angle and some things like that. So you can trick some of that out and play with some of that. But if you use WPF and Blend, I could use a 3D model that actually rendered hardware accelerated in 3D, and you could spin it around and play around with it and do all those sorts of things. That's not something that's integrated into the Silverlight.
There's a Boulder project too.
What's that?
The Boulder project. The Silverlight library for 3D rendering, sort of like a paper vision.
Yeah. So you can, I mean, you can explore software rendering and other things like that, but this is pretty much as far as I wanted to go. And this is the kind of practical way to work with the platform and get fairly good results. So basically, you know, for people that haven't dug into Silverlight yet, you know, the basic steps here are you can do all of this in Blend. You can do, design is actually nice to work with as well in terms of, I probably would normally start a design mess around with this, but I want to keep it fairly simple. So you go to Blend, you can create some visual interface things, and then you can write some JavaScript to do some basic wire-ups and whatnot. I use Visual Studio to do that, and just write a Notepad or any other program as well. And then you have a site or an app that you can just throw on your web server and you're good to go. So I'm planning to put this up as soon as I get time, although I've said that a million times before, so I'm not promising that I'm going to put this up. But I do want to use this as an ongoing rolling demo and play around building some of the other micro apps in here to demonstrate other features. Plus, I just am really looking forward to the headline of iPhone on Silverlight confusing a lot of people.
How did you incorporate the bitmaps into that?
The bitmaps are just so you can add. This is my project panel over here with different resources. So I've got a couple of different JPEGs in here for backgrounds. So basically, you can do a import. So you just say you go to file. I don't even know where that is actually.
The project.
Control I. And yeah, you can add an existing item. Right click on project, same as Visual Studio. You can go and add another element to your project. So basically, you just go and file browse to a bitmap object. It'll copy a local version to your project directory, and then from there, you just double click on it, and it'll add it to your project. And it's just it uses an image object type, which will show up in your timeline. So here's this image that I just created, and then you can use the properties panel to manipulate it, or you can just scale it and set the different settings and whatnot. So, and this object is just one XAML tag. So if I go use XAML, it'll highlight the oops. Actually, I don't have a connection yet.
So the SLDCSF wireless should be back up. You guys.
Okay, there we go. So, yeah, if I look at the XAML for that, all it is a image tag defining the height and width in here and a source path. And so it doesn't actually embed the bitmap data in XAML or in your project in any way. You copy the JPEG up to the server, just like you're doing HTML. And so the kind of nice thing about that is you can have multiple image sets and you can just specify the source for the ones you want and just the content you're using is loaded when it's needed. You can preload it and do all kinds of other fancy things as well. There's a really cool feature that I don't know how many people use or are familiar with in terms of the zip packaging that's already available in 1.0 and looks like it's going to become more standardized around 1.1. But basically what you can do is you can take any content type that you want to use in your application and put it in any different set of combinations of zip files that you want. And then you can use some loader code to load that zip file, and the application can access any element within that zip file and map it to anything that it wants to. So if you have a dozen graphics, instead of doing a dozen HTTP queries to the server, you can put all those graphics in one zip, request the zip file, which could be pings, which don't have as good a compression on it, but now they're wrapped in a zip file, and for whatever other things you want to do, and you can programmatically extract them and render them to the screen, which is just kind of a cool way to accelerate performance and package content. And I think it's going to, they should alter some paradigms of how you interact and deploy some of your content. So I got a few other demos to do, and people are going to get hungry and want to show other things pretty soon. So I'm going to jump forward to the next demo here, which anybody seen this one already? Top Banana? A couple people. So this was our first Silverlight application. This was something that we developed for the Mix conference earlier this year. And we were fortunate enough to be the very first people outside Microsoft to get Silverlight 1.1 bits and try to build something with it. So it was a very interesting time in that we had internal dev, pre-alpha builds of the Visual Studio with pretty much no docs or other things that are convenient to have, and tasked with creating something cool that we've never built or didn't really know what we were building. So there was a WPF prototype of a video editor that we kind of used as a feature set guideline for what we wanted to do. And the basic concept was to create a desktop video editing application on the web. So this is what we ended up creating. And it was just called Top Banana. And basically, you see down here on the left is the different clip assets that I have available that are videos. And I can go and grab any of this content and drop it onto the screen here and then play it back. And you get basic video player functionality. Kind of the nice thing here is that these are all Windows Media clips. So we already had Windows Media content. We didn't have to do any special file preparation or anything else to work with the content, and we also have basic, scrub capability and all that. But again, we didn't want to create yet another just kind of video player. We want to be able to create something that lets us actually edit content. So I can go in here and click and drag on the in and out points of the timeline, and now I'm creating a dynamic edit subclip of this content. And then I can go and take some other content, and the other things, we get some pretty nice performance with this and that. I can go in and drag a couple of different clips out, and I can just play multiple versions simultaneously to see what I want, but I'll go in here and trim some of these down, so I'll just cut some time out of these. And then now what I get as well is when I start to drag these clips around, you see I get this kind of overlap graphic, which is telling me that I can snap these clips together. So if I go and snap a few of these clips together, now I get a preview. And if I hit preview, now what it's going to do is give me all of those clips combined into one edit. So now when I play it back, it's playing out the timeline clipping that I did in each of those three clips as one piece of content. So, we're just extending the functionality and the capabilities and the interactions, but we're also able to leverage XAML in that we've got vector-based assets so that we can go in and reuse and scale up and down and not get pixelation and all of those things. But we've also got our entire interface, our kind of workspace here is scalable, and I can navigate around it and do different things. So I kind of have this regional-based concept of editing, so I can just kind of go over to a new area and get some new clips set out over here, and then go over to another area and start setting up another project. And then I also have a trash can, lets me go and throw things away to clean up my space. So pretty traditional, interaction paradigms. I can also collapse different interface elements to give myself more room. And we play around with a couple of other interesting features, kind of rearrange things here a little bit. But probably the coolest thing we did is this film strip mode. So you have your normal kind of video graphic looking player here. these other projectors to work. And what I can do is also click and drag and resize this container. And you'll see what that's doing now is it's giving me multiple images of that content. And whenever I resize the container, it adds or subtracts how many clips are seen based on the space that you have available. So now what I'm seeing is a snapshot of the chapters or different sections of the content. So if I wanted to get, you know, this girl, I kind of have an idea of where she's at in the clip. If I want to stop at this 3D animation with all the boards, then I've got a good reference of where to jump to grab that content. And then I can even go through, and there's another feature that lets me click and drag up here and step through the content frame by frame. So we're able to explore a lot of different interaction paradigms and just have some kind of fun with it. You know, I can go and grab multiple clips and do the same thing so that I can see where things are at. And you'll notice that, you know, my performance isn't really being affected or tanky by doing this. And all these elements are live video elements. I'm not doing like proxy swapping in the background of switching to a static image to a video to a static image. There's, you know, like 30 or 40 instantiations of video elements on the screen right now. Every one of these still shots is actually a video clip. And when we resize and manipulate the content, we're actually just reseeking each clip to a new position. And we had originally done this. We didn't think we'd be able to get away with doing that. So we had originally done this as exporting a bulk JPEG sequence and writing some programmatic logic that could find the closest JPEG at like 1 frame or 1 second intervals and loading them in. What we actually found is we could do a thumbnail video clip of the whole piece of content and instantiate that a half a dozen, or even 50 times, and then dynamically seek into it. It gave us better responsiveness, better performance, and smaller file size, because rather than JPEG, we're using video compression. And when you're using JPEG, if you have, you know, second one and second two, they may have only changed a little bit, yet you have the entire data of each image in a JPEG because they're not aware of each other. By encoding all those thumbnail clips as video, when you have a little bit of change, 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 the codec is just saving the difference between each frame. So we got over a 10-to-1 file size savings by using video for showing the different static states in this mode than we had from JPEG, because we're really able to leverage that. So that was really cool. I was pretty blown away by the fact that, you know, we really didn't have time to get in and do a lot of performance optimization, and we could do things like maintain this scalable interface paradigm and have this amount of content and video playback be interoperable simultaneously was way beyond what I expected, especially since this was pre-alpha. And we didn't do any implicit performance optimization. And I'm running this on your computer, but I don't have, there's no dedicated video card in here, so you can share memory. It's a dual 1.6 Centrino machine. And I've got two copies of Visual Studio Blend and Vista running in the background. And it's not the point. So that was pretty eye-opening to me. And once again, I'm running a full-screen application here, but I'm sitting inside of Firefox. And so this runs cross-platform, Firefox IE, Safari, Mac, PC, and they're working on Linux already. So it by far exceeded my expectations. I'm still surprised by this application, because I mean, we really created this thing as a demo, and I really thought we'd like create a demo, hack it together, make it look like it does stuff. But it actually does the stuff that it looks like it does, which is even better. Yeah.
So I see on your website you talk about this application, but it's not actually available on the web, I think.
Yeah, so when we originally developed this, we were working with pre-alpha before 1.1 shipped, so we didn't have any way to publicly deploy it. Part of our plan with this is to deploy it publicly. We've just been trying to align with the release schedule. So now that SoWire 1.0 has fully released, 1.1 is kind of, there's a refresh version of 1.1 that has a new 1.0 bits in it, which is what we've been waiting for. So now that that's up, this is actually a newer version than Mix. This is actually running on the publicly available 1.1 refresh bits. So we've actually got a version of this that we're just about to push live, which is also going to leverage Silverlight.live.com. So we're actually using part of the Microsoft serving infrastructure to host the content, which will let us edge, distribute it, and scale it, and all of that. So that's all done, all ready to go. We're just coordinating the actual rollout of that with Microsoft. So the other thing that we're doing is we're releasing a whole set of documentation, source code, and starter kit of everything that's here. And that will be available for download as a, I can't remember what Microsoft calls it, starter kit, which will include everything to deploy this on your own system and make your own interactions using the same code and functionality base. So that will be going live sooner than later as well.
Yeah. I don't know if you said this already, but how much manpower do you think?
That's a good question. I get asked that a lot, and I'm always trying to calculate what that actually is. We had just about 5 weeks before Mix was when I knew that Silverlight 1.1 was going to exist. And so I had no concept of the managed code, the C-sharp capability, where Glenn was going, what the integration path is, and all that. We're like 5 weeks before, like, so there's a new version that we're going to announce at Mix that's going to have managed code, integrated Visual Studio, sort of thing. I'm like, okay, well, now maybe I'm interested in developing some stuff with Silverlight. Well, I get it, because we want you to build an app and show it in a month. So I was like, can you hand me some bits, and we'll go and start coding and building this thing. I'm like, we'll get back to you with that. So it was about 2 weeks after that before we got our first build and a 1.1 player that we could actually develop. So we ended up with just over 3 weeks of actual time to do development, and there was about 3.5-4 of us working on it consistently leading up to Mix. So that's what we had to work with. We were able to create a fully functional version, added and changed some things since then. But it took a lot less time than it should have, and we were really able to scale and have multiple people working on the project simultaneously across design and development and testing and all of that, which was a huge thing. Working with the XAML and the C-sharp Visual Studio thing that blew me away as well was that we didn't have to figure out how to do it. We just started doing it, and we did it, and we're done. So I would say overall, this sort of thing makes the most sense as like a 3 to 4 month project with 2 to 4 people, depending on where you're trying to go with it, what your feature set is, how broad you're trying to be. Because you want time to do some user testing and prototyping, as well as debugging and deployment, architecture performance, and support, all of those sorts of things. So all in all, I'd say this is roughly like a 3-person, 5-month effort to get it to the point of consistency and doing all the documentation that we're trying to make this not a one-off, but a building block that is much more malleable. So I'd say now that we know everything that we know, 2 people can sit down and build this whole thing in 2 weeks. If we want to start from scratch and build something similar with the same level of complexity and interoperability and future capability, it's a few people for a few months. So it all depends on what you're doing.
Can you compare that to the Adobe stack? Do you have an opinion on that?
It's really hard to. I've tried to figure out, because we've built a lot of not dissimilar Flash applications, but none with quite the same type of interaction and functionality. Built ones that are more complicated and less complicated in different ways, so it's really hard to parallel. I'd say I would imagine we could have done it faster in Flash or something else just because we're already familiar with that and don't have to spend any time figuring out what we're doing. But at the same time, in 3 weeks, we were basically able to figure out a whole new set of tools and build the whole application, which with Flash, if we didn't know what we were doing, there's no way we could have ramped as quickly and built the same sort of thing, I would say. So now that we have some experience with both, I'd say overall, it's very comparable in the amount of time it takes once you know what you're doing to develop with either tool set. What I don't think I could do as well is the fact that we were able to scale our team so dynamically, in that if I had two engineers one day and a designer and then three engineers the next day and then one, we were able to distribute the project, and this is the actual project file in Visual Studio, and we have things broken out in some different XAML files and different class files and things like that, but one solution file that we work with the same file in Blend, the same file in Visual Studio. So we could have one person or 10 people working on this project simultaneously and not stepping on each other, which I've never been able to figure out how to do with Flash. Flex solves some of those issues. But the fact that I could have multiple people compiling, developing, changing, and revising simultaneously and actually get, you know, not quite a doubling by doubling the physical size of the team, but a significant amount of more throughput power as I scaled the team was huge. And that, I think, was the biggest value add, aside from, you know, there's some things that Silverlight can do that Flash can't do. There's a lot of things that Flash can do that Silverlight can't do yet or isn't going to do. That, you know, is all kind of apples and oranges. But I think the fact that I could just build a larger and larger dev team and get more and more done was the biggest thing that I took away from this as something to really seriously consider. Because other than that, everything's preferences. What tool do you like better? What results do you want more? What are you looking for? What is your back end? You know, those are all things that are going to fall into specific categories. But what I couldn't get away from is just the workflow that this gave us from, you know, we started in design in the design tool, we moved from design to Blend, we started integrating Visual Studio for the code, we were able to do all the testing and deployment and all these different sorts of things. It was just a really solid experience overall with such a new tool set. So I give it some latitude in that, you know, we didn't have the same expectations that we have of tools that have been out and refined version after version after version, but Visual Studio has and performs exceptionally. And Blend is in Rev 2 of what we're using is getting more solid every day. So those were kind of the biggest things that I took away from the overall experience that impressed me most.
Can you show us what the code looks like?
Some of the code looks like, sure. So let me open this up in Blend as well here.
What I mean is the code, the animation code.
So we didn't write too much code, programmatic animation code. We took as much use as possible of the timeline and other things that we have. But here's the same file that I have open in Visual Studio right now in Blend. And I can go into my controls folder here and grab something like the clip bin. So this is the thing that shows up in the bottom left. And again, these are all very simple, you know, and we have fairly rudimentary primitives. But, you know, this is all a combination of rectangles and strokes and simple text and, you know, vectors and gradients that were all illustrated in design and then exported to XAML, and then we started modularizing them in Blend. And I think some of these have multiple states to them. So, you know, like here's... zoom out here a little bit. So here's the clip bin, and I have a minimize storyboard in here. Just arrange this. So when I play this, you can just see it's just triggering a fade animation. So I'm using some keyframes in the storyboard down here to trigger that effect. And so I didn't write any code to do that. It's writing XAML in the background to do that. But one thing that's really interesting too is I don't have a first keyframe on some of these things. Which is a really cool trick, because one of the things that's a pain in the butt when you're doing things like minimize, maximize, is what happens if you start maximizing and then you want to minimize before you finish maximizing? You either have to write some blocking logic that lets the animation finish and then run the minimize, which just complicates things. Or if halfway through a fade up, maximizing, you say minimize and start fading, usually that minimize will assume you're at full on and it'll jump to full and then start to fade, and you get this weird flicker effect. Without having these starting keyframes, what that means is take whatever state this property currently is and animate it to this new state. So you can actually go minimize max, minimize max, minimize max, and wherever it is in between states, it'll switch gears and start going to the new state that you have a keyframe for. which is kind of a cool little thing. So, you know, this is how it looks in Blend. And the other cool thing is you can compile straight from Blend or Visual Studio. But in Visual Studio, I'll go, here's the clip bin, the XAML for that. So you'll see this is, you know, the minimize, it creates this this chunk of code, which is setting all of the properties that are being manipulated. So here it's basically just a bunch of opacity properties are being manipulated over time and being set to zero, so that they're hidden. And then here's some of the different actual assets represented in XAML. So I've got some rectangle effects and scroll top triangle, you know, they're just basic paths with different color properties and rotation transformations and things like that. Again, we didn't write any of this. We just went in Blend, drew it, or in Design, and it wrote the code for it. And then we could go in and tweak and manipulate things if we wanted to manually, but the only thing we would do textually is the code. So here's some of the C#. Minimize these panels here. So the base of these files are created automatically, and then you can go in and just start coding. So here we have our clipbin class, and then we've gone in and cleaned up and collapsed the code for distribution here. But I can just expand that, and I can see here's all of the public methods that we expose. So if you want to add clip, you call a function, and you pass it these parameters. And then there's all this code hitting stuff in here that the tool is going to pick up. So if I wanted to extend and create a new function, you know, let's say I downloaded this kit and wanted to go create something else, I could go in here and say add special clip, and let's just say it's going to take one path called name, and then I could have some special function where this is just going to go and call add clip. And then it's going to tell me what all my options to send are, and it's going to want a string. So, you know, I'm going to say it's this thing. And, you know, you can just go in here. This is kind of the cool thing about Visual Studio. When you want to switch into coding mode, is you get really good dynamic code hitting and other things like that layered right on top of the environment. The other thing is there's a really cool interoperability with the design asset elements. So if I go in here and look at the property of, let's say, this collapse button, when I go into the code, if I wanted to do something to that button, I can go in here. Oh, you know, it's probably not registered in this class. But when you're working in the same scope of the vector assets that you have named, it'll actually show up in Visual Studio, and it'll give you a code hint of all the properties that you can set directly. And that makes it really nice to go back and forth between code-generated visual elements and design-generated visual elements and all those sorts of things. So it's a really interesting workflow dynamic and interaction that you have with all of that.